Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Stolen by McGillie, score! 5 seconds into the game.
Who says this guy is afraid to fly? He left a vapor trail.
Backhand score!
Alexander McGillie.
Hall of Famer Alexander McGillie. No need for a Marty Rantanen on this one. It is well-received and long overdue in the eyes of many. And Marty Alexander McGillie, a huge part of this year's upcoming Hall of Fame class of 2025.
Stacked class when you think of Zdeno Chara, Duncan Keat, Joe Thornton. You know, that's great. With McGillie, obviously, Carey Price could have been on that list. He was passed on. Maybe they inducted too many goalies 2 years ago when they brought in Mike Vernon, Tom Barrasso, Henrik Lundqvist. They were like a year of the goalie, and we're going to have to wait until next year for Carey Price because he'll go in. But great on McGillie to finally get the call to the Hall. You see some of the highlights, obviously. An amazing season where he and Teemu Selänne ended up with 76 goals. Yeah, I think this is fitting, right? And it was too long overdue for McGillie, but finally you get in, and I think seeing all these highlights of, you know, 89 and 16 together with the Sabres, LaFontaine, McGillie, LaFontaine, these two were great, so it was awesome.
It certainly was a treat over the 381 games that he played in the Sabres uniform, 211 goals, 444 points, and of course, beyond Buffalo, seemingly similar impacts wherever he went, which was Vancouver, New Jersey, Toronto, and ultimately hoisted a cup with the Devils. So congratulations to Alexander McGillie as part of this year's class of 2025. Maybe a little more on it a little later, of course.
Yes.
It was fascinating and unprecedented, really, at the time when McGillie came to the NHL, defected, and the Sabres, of course, you know, they knew, or they thought they knew, what they were getting, but it's not like they went with a high draft pick, right? It waited until the fifth round, McGillie comes over. But we're at that time where we're talking about the draft, and we're talking about, okay, who joins the organization at the end of this week when the draft happens in Los Angeles, and then what happens immediately following? Development camp, and then you wait, you get to rookie camp, and then all of a sudden the preseason is upon us in September, and yesterday the schedule was unveiled with 6 preseason games, and Buffalo will play both the Jackets, the Wings, and the Penguins twice each, 3 of those games at home. You can get all the information regarding tickets, times, all the rest of it at sabres.com. Of course, how many more young players might be in the lineup in the preseason based on what materializes this week? Chris Baker from Sabres Prospects is with us. Bakes, where is your focus right now? Is it more on what happens outside of the draft this week for the Sabres, or within the confines of 7 rounds in LA?
My focus right now is trying to fit my big head on this screen. But other than that, I think, it's a fascinating time for the Sabres right now. A lot of chatter going on with the top club, but of course I am focused on the 10 picks that they have. We'll see if there's 10 bodies that come into development camp next week. And it's an exciting time across the board in Saberland, if you ask me.
So before we talk about the 9th overall pick and some of the prospects that obviously you've followed and you may have penciled in for that spot. So because of McGillie and his induction to the Hall of Fame, 1995, we are at the draft at the Edmonton Northland Coliseum, and I'm about to be drafted. And all of a sudden, the Buffalo Sabres traded Alexander McGillie to the Vancouver Canucks for Michael Pekka, a first-round pick that ended up being Jay McKee and Mike Wilson, I believe, which turned out to be Rhett Warner, and which turned out to be Ryan Miller down the road, right? So there's a lot of different branches there. And then I got drafted by the Sabres. So I'm saying, like, okay, before we get to the prospects, how in your crystal ball are you seeing maybe the trades and all of that happening at the draft because of maybe the drop off around 9, 10, 11 and everything. So, I mean, McGinley was straight out of the draft. Who knows what happens? But I'm just saying maybe that's what is going to happen here with the Sabres at 9.
Yeah, I think that the Sabres are very much in play. I mean, Kevin Adams said it yesterday that he's open for business. And I think open for business might be trading the pick outright or maybe moving up. If Jerry Fortin says it's a 5-7 player deep board before there's a drop off and you're sitting at 9, thank those lottery balls for that, right? I think the Sabres are going to be active pursuing, maybe moving up more so than moving back this year. And, you know, look, you can't avoid seeing some Sabres premium assets on trade boards across the league. There's bundle opportunities for a big, you know, it seems to be some vibes in the marketplace right now that Sabres are going to be a player and there could be some big deals cooking. Are they going to get done on Friday? Maybe we'll see, but I think they're very, I think it's going to be a pretty active with so many teams looking to get better. More buyers and sellers. I think there's going to be a lot of conversations happening. I think there's going to be some creativity. And the Sabres have a lot of assets. It's not just the names that we know that are on these trade boards from some of the insiders. Got a lot of prospects, too, that could be sweeteners. And there's some currency there that I think is going to have a lot of discussions for Kevin Adams.
Who do you think is most attractive in that realm as far as, you know, the prospects that you think other teams might be interested in most?
You know, I think it's hard. I think it would be, you know, look, I don't want to, you know, get into a discussion about a Jiří Kulik, but I think like a Noah Oslin could be someone that could be very attractive as a sweetener. I think maybe one of those extra defensemen that you have, honestly, and the, you know, the Sabres have a pretty good stable of right shot defensemen, you know, as a sweetener, you know, maybe you don't have to put an A-level prospect in there, but a guy that, you know, did well. Hey, is Ryan Johnson, we still consider him a prospect. Is he a guy that maybe a team would see an opportunity for in their organization, right? He does. But I mean, there's something there, I think, with him. Look, I think they're open for business, not just at 9, with any of these prospects that aren't on the top club roster right now, honestly.
So, okay, let's focus on the prospects. I said I wasn't going to talk about prospects until you came on the show, so I haven't even looked at names. So all the names they're going to give me today, I'm writing down. I'm doing some research before we do our draft reaction on Friday while the first run happens. So who is your first name that you think of when you say Sabres pick at 9 and this is the first name that comes to mind?
Brady Martin.
Okay.
From the Sioux Greyhounds. I think, you know, he played center. He's been a really just a consistent player, brings the same energy on and off the puck, physical. I think there's questions about whether or not Brady Martin is going to be available at 9 just based on conversations that he had at the combine, dinners that he had with teams that are picking ahead of Buffalo. But I think when you look at him, just heavy disruptive style, he's exactly what they need in the pipeline. And he's exactly what the team needs at the top level. Not that you're making the pick right now to address the Buffalo Sabres in 2025-26, but when you think of like a two-way guy, Mike Richards style vibes in terms of his engagement level and the way he leads by example, I think you'd be pretty happy to get him there. You might have to move up to get him though if you want him. If you're convicted and he's your guy, you might have to go up and get him a couple spots. But he's like where I start this discussion would be as an ideal fit if you can stay at 9 and somehow he slips to you.
Okay.
He's seemingly gained more track.
No, go ahead, Duffer. Go ahead. Sorry, there's a little delay, but go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm going to restart my connection. I'll be back in 2 minutes here.
Okay, you restart the connection. We'll keep going. So is it the point total? Is it the positioning? Is it the... you know, what like draws you to Brady Martin? Is it the size? I mean, he's 6 foot, 190 pounds. It's not like he's got this big size, but what is the number one thing that you say, hey, if the Sabres were to keep the 9th overall pick and they draft Brady Martin, that people are not going to throw their hands up in the air and say, oh my gosh, like another prospect, like what is the draw there that for you was the number one thing?
It's everything that he does. He does everything well. He may not be a standout in one area. He's just going to be reliable.
Okay.
Leads by example. He just keeps coming. I like his physicality. If you think about puck battles, those guys that give reverse hits, they move on to the next guy. They stay on their next check. They're following the puck around the ice. They're not getting themselves out of position while doing it. He's just very smart. When you watched him this year with the Greyhounds, he did everything, Marty. Really good at surveying, holding pucks, being patient at the top of the zone, waiting for an opening to either attack himself or find an open teammate. Mm-hmm. But off the puck, his intelligence And I think that he just gets it. When you look at his background, because look, you can make judgment on these players all day long by just looking at what they do on the ice. Get to know him off the ice. Comes from a farming background, a Mennonite community up in Ontario, hardworking. You know, if this kid, if he doesn't have a hockey career, he's going to work on his farm. What does it tell you about the work ethic? It's already programmed into his brain. Yeah. And I think that that says a lot about him as a human being. And I'm pretty sure that this kid just blew it away in his interviews, whether it was Anaheim, Boston. You know, I can see him fitting in a lot of organizations that are picking ahead of Buffalo, but he would be ideal. And there's just a lot to like there as a human being and the player.
So when I look at the, you know, prospect rankings, Craig Button has him ranked number 6. Bob McKenzie has him number 8. Elite Prospect has him 12. You know, there's a lot of people that have, you know, when you have between 6 and 12, does that mean that either there's Craig Button likes him a lot. He's got him 6. Would you think that he fits in that 5 to 7 players that Jerry Fortin talked about? Like, that would be one of them that they are looking at saying, you know, we'd love him at 9, but we think he may be gone at that moment.
I think, and this is where Duffer was going, I think, before he had to restart. He was talking about how, you know, Duffer brought it up that he seemed to be a late riser. It's because of his performance at the under-18s. I think there's a higher probability that he goes ahead of where Buffalo is picking, maybe just a couple spots. I could see this guy being a Boston Bruin, for example, just with the work ethic and how he plays the game. Forget the size for a second. They like bigger players historically. But you see where I'm going with this, though?
I know what you're trying to do, though. You listened to the show yesterday, and you want me to say, suck it, Sweeney, again, and that's what I'm doing again. I don't want the Boston Bruins to get a guy that you like, so I don't want that to happen. And I think that this is Duffer. We just stayed on Brady Martin here because I know you had you had a question on it. So welcome back. But okay, so no. Boston may like him, and I may like him. There's people around him. If he goes, who's your next guy on the list that you're like, okay, this is one of those 5 to 7 that maybe we had him a little ahead of 9, but maybe would slip there.
Look, I think a guy that you could probably comfortably forecast being available to Buffalo at 9, if we just stay there, is big right shot defenseman Radim Mertka. You're going to hear the Sabres connected to him a lot in the next couple of days. Came over right after Thanksgiving from Czechia, played men's league and wasn't getting a lot of minutes. You heard Jerry Fortin talk about Mertka yesterday glowingly in terms of just his journey to North America and the upside that can come with him being surrounded with more resources and development time. The Sabres, when you look at the pipeline right now, they're really good at center. I have questions about right wing depth. By the way, Martin could end up playing right wing, but we're talking about Mertka, okay? But they are really healthy with right shot defensive prospects, believe it or not. When you look at Sturbach, Adam Kleber, Komarov, Gavin McCarthy, Simon Pierre Brunet, they're good there, but they could always get another one to be really stocked up. And Mertka fits right in as a guy who is big, moves, he's intelligent. The Sabres have talked about, how do you get better goaltending? Kevin Adams has said, he always defers, we got to play better defense in front of our goaltender. When you look at the Sabres prospect that played with Mertka this year, Scott Ratzlaff, didn't have a great start to the year. Didn't make Team Canada World Junior as an incumbent. Didn't make the team. Mertka gets there. What happened to Ratzlaff's game after he didn't make Team Canada? Ratzlaff's game magically got together. You could attribute some of that to Mertka being in there. And once he got transitioned into the WHL style, game took off. Produces points, really smart with the puck. Mertka, big, long. We're talking about a 6'6", 220-pound, 18-year-old.
Big guy.
We've even seen him play, get shootout attempts. Now, he didn't go, Merrick Malik, a fellow countryman, you know, between the legs or anything like that. But it shows you that he has hands. He's got the reach, right? He can go around guys, just like Komarov. Komarov gets shootout attempts, Duffer, right? In Rochester. So there's a lot to like there. I just think the Sabres have a lot of intelligence on this kid by virtue of tracking Ratzlaff. And I think they believe in his path and what they could do with him. Guy kills plays and just, I don't know if he'd be a safe pick for them, but he would be a pick that you can easily understand if they make it at 9.
If you're betting on this, do you think forward or defense for Buffalo?
I would like a forward, honestly. I would like to find a way to move up and get a Brady Martin if you can do it. I think Mertka, I can rationalize. Okay? I can rationalize it. There's another player, though, that I really want to talk about. and that's Victor Eklund. And I've mentioned him before. I think I came on with you the day after the lottery, and I said, let's just not forget about this kid, you know, because I know he's not the biggest guy, 5'11 and a half, might be a little underweight presently, but he plays bigger than he is. I just want to make that, like, Jerry talked about recency bias. Someone in the press asked about a recency bias with the Florida Panthers.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you a recency bias with Victor Eklund. I see elements of Brad Marchand's game in this kid because he's always on you. He's like a robot. He suffocates you, and he's quick, and he's really good with the puck. He's fast. I don't want to forget about this kid because I think that he fits like a glove if you miss out on some of these other guys that we've already talked about. I'd like to see a forward duffer to answer your question directly.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a defenseman, I can rationalize Mertka.
Is there anybody that's projected to maybe go top five now that could slip? Meaning, like, okay, so Matthew Schaefer is going to go one, and Misa probably going to go two. And then all of a sudden there's, you know, there's always something that happens. You know, a name that comes out that somebody really liked and was ranked 10th and gets picked third or fourth, and then somebody's dropping. Is there a name that you think is ranked in the top five or six that could drop to nine right now?
I think there's two ways to answer the question. I see Anton Frondell as a guy that a lot of people haven't gone three, and he's the guy that I have a lot of questions about. Like, not all the way there where as many people are. I think there's a greater consensus that he goes third or fourth, and I don't know. Maybe he slides a little bit, maybe not all the way to nine. Higgins is a guy that came in. I think Higgins, he was a freshman this year at Boston College. He came in. He's been the guy. I think what we're seeing in terms of the public perceptions of how this draft is going to go, I see him sliding down boards and I don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a size thing. He's 5'10 and a half, 5'11, but he's always been the guy. I think he's been over scrutinized. Familiarity breeds contempt. Mm-hmm. If he's a guy that I see the public thinking is going to slide, and I don't understand it. He's a legitimate number one center, I think, in the NHL. And I just think he's been over scrutinized, but he's a guy. Now directionally, Marty, there's another guy in this draft class who we didn't get to see a lot of this year. You have to go back 2 years to get a feel for him, who's a guy that might be that Beckett Seneca this year, right? Is Roger McQueen from the Brandon Wheat Kings.
Mm-hmm.
You see him like right in the 9, 10, 11 range, he could go five. So he's another guy that maybe could go up in the other direction that causes a Martin or someone else to slide down a little bit. So it's going to be fascinating because I think we're solid on the first two. I think you nailed it with Schaefer and Misa. And then I think that it gets interesting at three, just like it did last year.
What is the outlook for McQueen based on time missed and, you know, from what you know?
I'm personally nervous. Like when I saw him at the combine and understood that he made it through everything okay, and he himself, of course, was saying that he's healthy and over the back. I'm still nervous about the medical. Part of me thinks that the Sabres can afford to take the swing on a player like that. 6'5", could be an elite centerman. Good soft skill. I think he's got enough of a mean streak that it could emerge more. But I'm nervous about the medical. I'm just nervous about the durability. I mean, we went through this with Nolan Patrick years ago.
Yeah.
Highly skilled, like really just top-end talent in his draft class. And now he ended up, I think, you know, exiting the NHL more like migraines. It wasn't any of the other injuries that he had, but mm-hmm. I mean, it just gives you pause. And that's, I'm nervous. I'm nervous about it if I were Buffalo.
Now, you mentioned a couple of, you know, well, players and right shot defensemen, and everybody's looking at right shot defensemen. And I know you're not going to find a right shot defenseman to play with Owen Power in this draft right now. Like, it's not, nobody you're drafting is going to come in and play the right side with Owen Power in game one of the 25-26 season. But is there a prospect or somebody, maybe not in the draft, but through Rochester and everything, that you say, at some point this year, I could see this guy getting called up and playing some minutes, and maybe it would be that right side defenseman that you're looking at? Or are we still a year or two away for those guys to get to that point?
You're probably a year or two away, because in terms of a current player in Rochester, Komarov's a guy that I think needs more time, but he's got the size. If his skating continues to develop, I think there's elements of his game that you could use in terms of his ruggedness defensively, his ability to shut down plays and add some offense, gets a lot of pucks to the net, but I don't see him being ready next year. The right shot defenseman that the Sabres have that I'm most excited about is Maxim Sturbach at Michigan State. He's going to go back. He's going to continue in that program. And I think when he gets in, he'll move through pretty quickly. But I don't see anybody there. On the blue line, you know, not on the right side, like a guy who can maybe come in and play that right side. Like Novikov still intrigues me. He intrigues me, but I'm not feeling that there's a readiness for him yet either. So I just think that right now you have this gap. And you're right. Any player that you draft right now, you better not want to come in and play right away. Even if you move up and you take a Porter Marton as a right winger, mm-hmm. you don't want these guys. Send them to college. I don't want any of these guys even close to the team next year.
Would you think that Schaefer would go back because of his injury last year? He can go number one overall. And we all know defensemen, it's, you know, sometimes you delay that a little bit, but him with the injury, the World Juniors, you think he goes back? Because there's talk that he could, you know, maybe even go to college. Like, he's not going back to Erie. Maybe he gets traded to London or something, or going back to college. So is this kind of draft where we may not see anybody make the NHL next year because even the number one overall pick may not?
He's the ultimate wait and see, because I think his game, his details, his intelligence, like, he has, I think, what it takes to survive as an 18-year-old in the NHL next year. I personally wouldn't do it. I'd be telling Matthew Darts, don't touch it. Like, bring him into camp and let him kind of see where he goes. But, like, here's the thing. College will be off the table for him. He won't go. Like, if he decides to go to college, he won't be in training camp.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so you have to make that decision pretty quickly. So you draft him, you talk to him, you sit down, you sketch out his plan. I lean towards him not being in the NHL next year because he didn't play a lot of minutes last year. Mm-hmm. He didn't. And I think just let him get his game back, let everything calibrate. You know, I know it's like riding a bike for a lot of these young talents, but I'm not playing around. Because you could derail the development by forcing them up too soon. And why bother? Be patient. Let them be a kid. College is the best years of our lives. Was for me.
Oh, my gosh.
Was for me.
Buzz Duffer has already plucked away his defense partner in Long Island, mentioning Noah Dobson the other day as a candidate. Like, I'm not saying that's what's happening, but, you know, he's an RFA. Who knows if he's going to stay there or not and what that's going to be. We know those RFA that want a lot of money in term, maybe there's, you know, issues. So, but I don't see Schaefer going back, going to the NHL next year. I think he's either going back to the O or moving on to college, which is a different element. We didn't have that before, but now players have that, you know, available to them to be able to transition to that.
I'm coming around on the idea. When the rule first came about, I didn't like it because it was chaos and I was trying to sort it out. I just think they need to set everyone straight on what the rules are. How long are you going to hold players' rights for when you draft them, regardless of what league you draft them out of? It's going to be really interesting because I think you're going to, I mean, we saw, I think, you know, Cole Reschny, who's in this draft class, going to go to North Dakota. Well, what that does is that derails the whole rebuild for Victoria in the Western League because mm-hmm. he was going to be a big part of their team next year. There's going to be a lot of chaos that happens with this. What happens to the USHL as a developmental league? Do you see the USHL and the CHL kind of come together? Mm-hmm. I think everything should be on the table, but I just want it all sorted out. But I guess the point of me jumping in and kind of opining on this whole topic is that I like the idea, at least for those bigger prospects, as a step. If you don't want to put them in the AHL, college is perfect for these guys, playing on the weekends, develop their bodies.
Play against older players, 23, yes. 24-year-olds.
Yeah, I think it's a good fit. So I'm coming around on the idea where I wasn't so hot on it at first because maybe I just need to take a change management course. You know, when we're done here, I'll get on the phone with HR and see what they can queue up for me. But, you know, on the draft, Marty, by the way, so we talk a lot about right D. Now, of course, that's kind of the flavor du jour when you're talking about the Sabres on the top club roster. But again, I looked at the right D that the Sabres have in the pipeline right now, and that's how I always tend to look at this. Mm-hmm. Even though the Sabres are young at the NHL level, look at your prospects. But when I look at the left D, I see an opening there. You have Johnson, Novikov, Luke Osborne. Then you have a couple question marks. Sean Cohane at Harvard, Patrick Geary, who's Sturbach's partner at Michigan State, and Pinoka. I see three guys that are really compelling and three maybes. Mm-hmm. I might have room. Like, I think that, you know, Kayshawn Atchison, who Jerry Fortin was asked about yesterday, is worth discussing for, you know, at least a minute. Because of, again, that recency bias, he plays rugged. He gets very involved offensively, had a really good year with the Barrie Colts in the Ontario League. And I think, like, Marty or Duffer, going back to your comment earlier about Brady Martin, like, late riser, had a really good under 18s. That's how Aitchison was. His second half of the season was exceptional, getting really involved. Again, he's physical. So I think you're going to be able to rely on those traits to translate. He's got good size. But his offensive game, whether it's jumping out of the zone, getting into the rush, or rotating down, finding soft spots, backdoor, I just think there's something there that a lot of teams are going to like. What I worry about him is his 9-2 high, is the recency bias of a guy that's, you know, rugged, and mm-hmm. you know, maybe there's questions that others have about his offense translating. Does it cause him to get overdrafted because of that bias? I don't know. We'll see. But I thought it was interesting that Jerry Fortin spoke glowingly about the player. Now, again,
yeah,
not going to tip his hand at all, but it was also worth mentioning here because I think there's a lot of steam on this player. But if it comes down to Mertke or Aitchison for me, I still think that Mertke would be the guy for Buffalo.
Yeah, I both have really tremendous attributes and excelled at the right time of year to be putting themselves in this conversation as the draft comes up to start on Friday and, of course, continue Saturday in Los Angeles. Chris Baker is with us. He's going to continue with us right after the break here on Sabres Live. Quick reminder that with the draft coming up, we've got an opportunity for you to take home blue and gold Sabres jersey signed by the entire 2025 draft class. It's available as far as entering to win by going to sabres.com/class, and you can enter between now and through the 4th of July. Back after this on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
We can pause on prospects for a moment, even with Chris Baker continuing along here, because we want to talk about the real deals. And one of them has gone down today. Evander Kane has moved on to Vancouver, so it's going home for him. And there wasn't much exchanged other than Vancouver taking on his whole salary, which is just over $5 million for one more year. Bakes, what do you think of the deal as Edmonton clears up some cap space for a fourth rounder?
See if going home inspires Kane to keep going and gives him a little extra energy coming into next season. I mean, that's really my thought on the trade. I mean, I think he's still, you know, he changed the way that Edmonton played when he got back in the lineup. And I'm curious to see. I mean, look, there's a lot happening in Vancouver. You know, we don't know what's going to happen there, but I mean, getting Kane is a nice piece. I guess we'll see. I mean, who's he going to play with? There's a lot of questions still to be answered, but I think he's happy to be going home.
I mean, the Oilers needed to free up some cap space, and they get a fourth round pick in return. That's nothing. But now you got a little bit more money to sign Evan Bouchard, maybe re-signing Connor Brown. But the orders were totally different when Kane helped their depth. And listen, if they hadn't lost Zach Hyman to a broken wrist against the Dallas Stars in the conference finals, maybe it would have made a difference in the final. But now the big thing is always Connor McDavid, right? Like, who did the Oilers have now to fill in the depth? They lose Kane. Perry's a UFA. Connor Brown's a UFA. Like, you know, Jeff Skinner's a UFA. They may want to deal Victor Arvidsson. Like, how are you putting this roster together in Edmonton to tell Connor McDavid, hey, we're going to be better next year? We're, other than changing your goalies, how are you doing it right now, Stan Bowman?
Well, that would probably do it, though.
Changing your goalies would probably do it. Yeah, but I mean, that's a lot of work to be done. So I don't know. I think that's going to be murky. If McDavid doesn't sign by October 1st, Bakes, do you think that he's a goner?
I'm all for chaos. I kind of would like to see it. Honestly, I am. I'm for chaos. No, but I mean, the Kane thing is a great example. I think you capsulized it perfectly. It creates more questions than answers. Mm-hmm. And I liked Kane's impact on that roster when he was there. So no, it's going to be interesting. I mean, McDavid's going to have, I'm for chaos. I think that I could see him wanting out if he doesn't get the answers that he feels happy with.
So the other thing, the rumor mill obviously is not going to stop, right? And I feel like Frank Cervalli, who's a free agent July 1, by the way, he's got like 4 or 5 days, 6 days time at Daily Faceoff. I think he's trying to create chaos, but on his list of tradable targets, you have J.J. Paterka, Bo Byram, Matthias Samuelson. You've got a lot of Sabres there. And apparently the Vancouver Canucks may have called the Sabres on Paterka and Byram, and who knows if that's just a, hey, what do you think, and hang up, or a long discussion. But if I am a team like the Sabres right now, And I see that the Canucks made that deal to acquire Kane. I almost feel like I got to give him a call to see where's their direction. What are they willing to trade and get rid of, and how maybe you can get some value out of trading somebody. I don't know. I feel like the Canucks lack direction right now when I look at their team.
It's, you want to talk about chaos. How about a Rutherford press conference, right? Like, yeah, there's a lot of fun there to be had. But I would say, like, I think you have to be very focused when you go into a conversation with them. Who are you calling them on specifically? Don't go in there open-ended. Have a target in mind. Is it Connor Garland? You know, like, maybe you don't talk about Elias Pettersson. You know, because I think that's how you have to play with them. This, you know, if you go in there very focused, you might be able to pick something off pretty quickly with them if they're kind of making some knee-jerk moves here. Not to say that Kane was a knee-jerk move, but... you know, how's the math work? But I mean, when I look at what the Sabres need, I'm addressing critical elements of the team, and I kind of like the compete level of Garland, for example. I think he'd be a guy that I'd call on. I don't know if you guys agree on that.
Yeah, well, we love him, but
we've loved Christmas Garland for a while. So, but that he's got his own nickname.
Yeah, but he's also he's gone from underwhelming in the start of his Vancouver career to key piece, and you know, there have been talks about extending and all that. I mean. If I'm Vancouver, he's not a piece that I'm parting with at this point in time. But again, they are in a strange place right now, are the Vancouver Canucks, despite their farm team having just won the Calder Cup. Other than Shelov's jumping up and perhaps being a full-timer, depending on the Demko, you know, his whole situation. I mean, do you continue to hitch your ride to him, or do you sell him now to the Oilers in a separate deal? I don't know. Like, I just don't think Vancouver's getting a huge boost from the farm club here. So I'm with you. I think they'd be wide open for some business. I just don't know if it's on Garland or not.
But I mean, look at the trade board, though. I mean, there's some premium assets there that Buffalo has, at least, you know, that are named on this, that are pretty high on the list. I mean, they're not chopped liver, right? So, I mean, and I hear what you're saying. Every good trade's got to hurt a little. Well, how much do they like a J.J. Paterka? How much do they like a Bowen Byram?
Mm-hmm.
I guess we'll find, you know, you don't know until you make the call, right?
What about Brendan Carlo? Another name that's appeared on the, you know, trade targets, Toronto Maple Leafs. I don't anticipate a lot of trades happening between those two rivals, but at the same time, Toronto maybe is looking to free up a little bit of dollars, and maybe Brendan Carlo could be one of those guys. He's a right shot. It's 2 years left at $4 million, well, 3.4 cap hit, but 4.1 on the AAV. That would fit a need that the Sabres would have. So do you anticipate Carlo moving from Toronto, and could the Sabres be a team that would call and inquire on him?
Sabres should be first in line making a call, I think, on a Brendan Carlo, honestly. Let's go back to the day after the lottery. You asked me a point-blank question. Do you want a top six forward or a top four defenseman right shot for power? And it was the quickest answer I've ever given you. It was that power partner. Carlo, I think, is the guy that fits that perfectly if you can get him. I think what you're looking at with Carlo, 10-team no trade until July 1st, goes down to an 8, I think, on July 1st. So he still has a little bit of a say. If you can navigate those waters, it would be ideal, I think, for Buffalo to pursue. What's the acquisition cost? Again, make the call and find out.
How much would you spend on John Tavares if he becomes available?
I don't feel it, like, for Buffalo. You know what I mean? I don't know. Like, I'm not saying he doesn't have anything left in the tank or anything like that. I mean,
he clearly does. He's the highest goal-scoring UFA this year.
Yeah, I know. That's what I mean. I just don't know if I feel it here for, like, where, you know, where the Sabres go. I mean, look, you need a center. You can't sit here and say that you need a number one center and then not talk about it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, what is it, 7?
Yeah, minimum.
You know,
I think
I think it's term. I think the key with him is spreading it out. You're going to have to give him, you know, a good number over multiple years and kind of spread the dollars out to maybe keep that AAV low.
Mm-hmm.
Is there danger there? I mean, how many years do you think he's got left?
But he's 34. And people talk about John Tavares like he's 38. Like, Brad Marchand's 37, and people are willing to give him $8 million for 4 years. I'm like, come on, people. Like, Marchand had 51 points last year. Tavares had 38 goals. Tavares is a center. He's a smart hockey player. And
yeah, but you can't sit here and say that John Tavares had a greater impact than Brad Marchand last year.
Not in the playoffs, obviously.
Not at any time. Marchand's a completely different animal in value.
Yes, but I think people are going to overspend on a Marchand this summer because of the shiny new toy. Now, John Tavares, it's interesting, Bakes, because
37, he's not a new toy.
Well, yeah, he's a shiny toy. Maybe it's an old toy that he got buffed, pull the polish out and make it look nice, a little spit polish. But John Tavares, apparently the Leafs and Tavares are far apart. If you, at the end of the season, would have told me that on June 25th, Tavares and the Leafs would still be far apart, I would have said, you're crazy. Like, Tavares is going to get done right away. He's going to take a hometown discount. And apparently that's not the case. But he probably doesn't want to go too far from home either. Kids are all set. He's home. It's like, okay, would the pieces of the puzzle fit better in a Toronto Buffalo travel for him as opposed to Toronto anywhere else in the National Hockey League?
I think that I think Buffalo would appeal to him if he has to, develop an exit strategy out of the Toronto market. Mm-hmm. Again, I think just for me, it's the dollars, it's the term. Cap's going up. You have a Skinner buyout number that escalates next year, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, what are you looking at there? Can you manage it through? I think a lot determines on Tuck's next deal. Are you keeping Paterka and you're paying him the dollars that he commands, right? There's a lot to go through here when you try to fit in. What? I mean, for Buffalo, would it be like 4 years, 7.5? I'm just throwing a number out there as a starting point for the discussion. I don't know.
For
it's probably
JT?
Somewhere in that area, right? What's that?
Yeah. For JT?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a lot. I mean, and again, just as a reminder, like the free agents Buffalo's looking at this year, you have Paterka, McLeod, Quinn, Kozak, Byram, Bernard Docker, Ryan Johnson, Devin Levi. Like, there's pretty substantial list here. And it doesn't matter whether some of them come in at really low. It's just, it's business that needs to get taken care of. And to Marty's point, that's why Toronto and that's why they're in this. They've got a lot of business too. And it seems like it has not been nearly as easy to knock off Marty, to your point. Like, hey, let's just get John Tavares done.
And look, the Sabres have over 20 million in cap space. They got plenty of cap space. Let's put numbers to players that are needed to be signed. Even if you don't like move Bo Byram or JJ Paterka, that's probably 16 million right there, like 8.8 or 7.7
each.
And
McLeod 14, gets them 16. To 20, basically. That's the thing.
You get just yeah, exactly. So I know people are saying, I have plenty of cap space. You don't have Columbus Blue Jackets 40 million cap space where you can go out and overpay somebody to make it work. You are pretty tight, and there's some big numbers. So, yeah, I think you have to be responsible. But if a John Tavares comes along, I mean, if you go Norris, Tavares, McLeod, maybe you move Jurie to the wing. Maybe that's a trade. Maybe you're moving a center. Maybe, I mean, I feel like you're but again, Bakes, they were top 10 in goals for per game last year. We look again, maybe it's not a shiny new toy in John Tavares, but it's a shiny toy. Is this the focus? Or, mention Carlo. I had two big blue boxes yesterday, a blue box on the fence and a blue box in the crease to try to fill for next year's game one. I feel like we're being attracted to an area where maybe the Sabres don't need it. They need to focus on the blue line and the crease.
Oh, definitely the blue line and the crease. But before we go to the blue line and the crease, while we're talking about a center, even though I know this player currently plays wing, who's moved up on the trade board today that we haven't talked about yet down in St. Louis? Jordan Kyrou. A guy that's probably going to pot 35 for you. He's got a contract. He's got term. Mm-hmm. He's making what, 7 and change? I don't have the number in front of me.
I think he's it. Yeah.
Is he 8? No, he might be over 8. He might be like 8.1.
Yeah.
Somewhere around there. So I apologize for that error. But I mean,
6
you got
years
for what,
left
six more
at 8.1.
Years?
Right.
So he's pretty interesting, right? What is he, 27?
7
years old. A little bit of a different player. But I think he plays more at that pace that you want. He's a speedster. But I like his positional versatility. He's a right winger, but he can play center. And it's compelling to think about.
Marty, you haven't talked about him. What do you think?
I love Jordan Kyrou. Now, I think if it gets done, this gets done at the draft. He has a full no move on July 1 kicking in. So, look, you better get it done beforehand or your hands are going to be tied to say to the player, okay, where do you want to go? And you got to make that happen. I love Jordan Kyrou. I remember years ago when the O'Reilly trade happened, the Sabres ended up with Tage Thompson, which was fantastic. But two of the players that I had on my list was Robert Thomas, Jordan Kyrou. Those were like the top two. And it'd be funny to think that maybe the St. Louis Blues said, we're not trading Kyrou and Thomas, and the Sabres ended up with Tage Thompson, which, great, it worked out. Like, awesome. But Jordan Kyrou would be a little edgy, a little grit, not a guy that goes out and drops the glove, but can be physical, win the one-on-one battles, can score, can produce. It's a lot of money, 8.1. He'd become, Duffer, he'd become your highest paid forward, which we didn't have him on the list of right. players that would be the highest paid forward, but he'd become your highest paid forward right now.
Right.
But I would be intrigued by Kyrou. Again, is this the focus? If there was a great defenseman that would be fitting exactly what you want on that list, I would say that's who you got to go after. But Kyrou would be interesting to at least make the call.
Yeah, I think you have to call Calgary if you want to go back to the blue line.
Yeah.
Take your temperature on Rasmus Anderson. I doubt they want to move Uyghur, but you just make the call because I think you have some assets that are going to be interesting that's going to generate a lot of conversations. Would Utah move Kesselring? Again, it brings you back to that right shot D, but there is a report out there the Sabres want two top six forwards. That's why it's worth looking at a guy like Kyrou, you know, to bring it back there. So I think that, like I said, this is, let's go back to the top. Very exciting time. It's not just a draft and you're going to add some prospects. There's a lot that can change here. And I think it's going to be just a lot of fun here the next couple of days.
Real quick, both of you had like one word answers here. Do you, either of you, both of you like Jake Neighbors?
Yes, emphatically.
I like him. I think he's very streaky and a little bit of the unknown. Like he will score a bunch and then it's like, what else? But I'm not emphatically. I'm not like, yes, like Bakes.
Just nice one-word answer, Marty. Nice one-word answer.
That's my version of a one-word answer.
Yes. Things we've learned over years on this show. Bakes, thank you. We will undoubtedly be talking soon. This is Chris Baker from Sabres Prospects. We'll wrap up Sabres Live after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Thanks again to Chris Baker for joining us on today's show. Of course, you can follow him at Sabres Prospects and listen and watch for his reaction with us when the Sabres make their pick on draft night on Friday in LA. We'll hop on our Sabres social channels and provide some reaction to... Mm-hmm. Maybe more than just the pick?
Well, I think that's what the vibes is. Like most people are saying, okay, how do you get better? And that pick, although it would be nice at number nine, and there's been a lot of good picks at number nine in the history of the NHL, it's a good player. But that player could be 4 or 5 years down the road. Like, okay, do we want 4 or 5 years down the road or we want now? And most people are saying we want now. So we'll see what happens. We always expect chaos, like Bakes loves chaos. And then often, you know, that doesn't happen. So I'm not going to expect anything. Just go with the flow and see what happens on Friday night.
Well, the latest rumor from Frank Saravalli is that Aaron Ekblad is trending out of Florida. What does this do to your thought process ahead of Friday night?
Well, my thought process is, let's just say that maybe Aaron Ekblad money would be the same as Bo Byram money, right? Or maybe even Ekblad north. Would be less. You think he'd be north of Bo Byram?
If he's going to free agency, there was gonna he's be a passing up a handsome deal in Florida to take more elsewhere. That's how I would look at it. Whether that's logical, I don't know.
I think Aaron Ekblad at the upper 7, maybe low 8 would be the number. Mm-hmm. Right now, and I think it would be a really attractive player to go after if you could play the right side.
Maybe bring Koepka along with him. See you tomorrow on Sabres Live.